Blog Talk Radio.
Right now at Lowe's, get savings you won't believe on our top Whirlpool appliances. Save $1,200 on Whirlpool Gold stainless steel four-door refrigerators, now only $1,299. Or clean up with savings of $600 on Whirlpool Cabrio high-efficiency top... Right now at Lowe's, get savings you won't believe on our top Whirlpool appliances. Save $1,200 on Whirlpool Gold stainless steel four-door refrigerators, now only $1,299. Or clean up with savings of $600 on Whirlpool Cabrio high-efficiency top-load washers and dryers. Get the pair for $998. Plus, get an additional 5% off every day when you use your Lowe's consumer credit card or any Lowe's business credit account. Lowe's, never stop improving. Offers valid through 11/14. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-Step Recovery and the rumradio.org show from the Sober Couch Network. That's Sober Couch. It's connected up with rumradio.org. Joe Ellen and Sarah on Thursday nights at 10, and Oliver Wednesday nights at 9 at the Half Measures Room. All great shows. Want to thank WNAH out of Nashville, Tennessee, who puts us over live on their feed and over their airways. To the folks in Nashville, Kentucky, and I believe parts of Arkansas, as a public service hour for the benefit of their listening audience and their customers. They feel that this is a worthwhile information, whether you're in recovery or not in recovery. Everybody knows somebody, and everybody's got something. Also want to thank RecoveryToday.net magazine. Really good recovery stories, 12-step and clinical. I want to introduce our co-host tonight is Harold. Harold, are you there?
Yes, indeed. Hello, everybody. Thank you, Joseph.
Harold does family counseling. Oh, I got some information for you that I picked up. It's called Children's Clinical Services at the Council of Alcohol and Drugs in Houston. I picked you up a flyer, and it had to do with individual, family, and group counseling, parent education, community education, school and consultations, etc. And I thought this might be something you might be interested in, behavioral health care for children and families affected by addiction.
Terrific. Thank you very much for thinking about that.
You're welcome. Exactly, I still believe the family is...
Time.
Yes. I believe that the work Carol does is counseling with families of all kinds of dysfunction. I believe that the family is the cornerstone of society, and what happens to the family ultimately will happen to the society. If the family breaks down, so will the society. I firmly believe that. Harold does a wonderful work in trying to hold back the tide, but he's one man. He's the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike. Harold?
Yes, indeed. I enjoy my work, and sometimes it's very sad. This week we've had a family that the baby died of SIDS, and what a trauma. Some mothers never find a way out of that trauma, and they're never the same again. I've been doing this for a long time, 3 decades, and so it's difficult to know what to do or what to say at a moment like that, and the important thing is to be there and to let your caring show, and maybe bring a casserole, hold someone's hand, but I don't know. We'll talk more about that later. I wanted to say a couple of things about Joseph's work. Out of his own pocket, he's paid for many things that make rumradio.org possible, and his website is one that focuses on working with others. It's a website that helps you recognize, folks recognize how to find a sponsee, how to find a sponsor, how to work with others, and it's all very strongly dedicated to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And so the website is not anything that makes money. It actually costs him money, but it's our way. Both of us have a way, want to pay it forward and be all prayed up, as I call it. And so you folks will want to go to the website, rumradio.org. And I appreciate Joseph for his spirit of service to his fellow man and woman. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. We're at 103 at rumradio.org. Has been in 103 plus foreign countries, including Mississippi. We've had 66,000 hits to the website, and we've gotten 1,060 letters from around the world. I stay to the 11th tradition, Alcoholics Anonymous 11th tradition of anonymity. So I'm not speaking for anybody. And my last name is not shown, and neither is my picture. I think that's program proper. The other thing to remember is there's no money being made. It's cost money to do this. So this is a strictly a labor of love. I'm just back from a citywide, which is a once a month AA function, and all the local groups. And tonight was a Lambda speaker. Lambda is the AA, the gay AA arm, where people of the gay persuasion meet together for to help each other in attaining and maintaining sobriety in AA. Recently went to a Lambda meeting, and I explained to him that I wasn't gay, but I do like show tunes, and I still love Judy Garland. I told him that, yeah, they got a laugh out of that. I also told him that I don't take an individual by the group they belong to. Because of AA, I'm beyond that sort of thing. I have no judgment about anybody at all. And who am I to judge anybody? People in grass huts shouldn't stow thrones. And I told him that I looked at the AA community just like I would look at the Irish community. Why the Irish community, you would ask? Because everybody knows, when Irish hearts are smiling, all the world's bright and gay.
There you go.
So we had some really good. I gave out a lot of cards tonight. One thing I noticed about Lambda and the gay community in AA, they're very open-minded. My experience is they're more open-minded than most of the static groups that I've gone to, by far. I think because of the gay experience. But they just are. They're very open-minded, had no problem giving out cards. They're open to new information wherever that may come. And there was a lady, really good talk. I would have preferred a little bit more solution, but she was funny as heck. I mean, I laughed for most of the hour that she spoke. And that's an AA thing that, you know, we laugh at the trouble because we can relate to it so well. And at the end of the meeting, I gave out a bunch of cards and then spoke to her. And she just made three videos for recovery. And I told her about Rum Radio, and she said, "Well, you think I could put them on your website?" And I said, "You know, let's take a look at that. And here's my number." So you never know when you're going to make that connection. The only thing that you know for sure in recovery is that if you take that step forward, something will always happen. But you got to take that step. Harold?
Yes, the what I call it doing the next right thing. And I get a lot of inspiration from Scripture. And for me, the Scripture that fits with that is called, "The Lord is a lamp unto my feet." And back in biblical times, they had what's called a foot lamp, which is basically a candle on a string that would hang down near the feet, and you could see about one or two steps. That's all the further you could see. So before you could move along, you had to take the step you could see in order to be able to see more, to see further down the path. And that's exactly what you just mentioned. If we've got to move forward, we've got to take the step that's been revealed to us, and then God will reveal more. Joseph?
I like that. That reminds me of the parable about having a candle. Do you put it under a bushel, or do you put it on a table where all in the house can see? I wrote that to somebody, and they were having a hard time with Rum Radio, and they didn't like it. And they won't look at it, but they had exception to it. And I said, should I not mention it? Would that make you happy? How would you know it existed if I didn't promote it? Did you think like it's you're supposed to come across it in a mystical way, and that's the only way that you're supposed to garner any kind of information? I've had candle. I prefer to put the candle on the table so anyone could see. And then I finished it up. I said, I know how you feel. I says, and I've had the experience before. Never try to teach a pig how to sing. It wastes your time, and it annoys the pig.
It annoys that pig. Yes, and it's like Brussels sprouts. I haven't tried them, but I know I don't like them.
I know I don't like anything I haven't tried.
Yes.
Okay, so let's get to the thank you, Harold. We're going to get into the
call-in. Let's get the call-in number and then get into our topic.
Okay, good idea. The call-in number, if there's any brave soul out there that would like to join us in with their experience, strength, and hope, or particular experiences they have, we'll be working on step three tonight. The call-in number is 760-825-0940. Again, 760-825-0940. Tonight's topic is step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I think the key words in step three is made a decision. It is essential that step three is taken immediately, if not sooner, once the sponsee has come to believe that a power greater than themselves can relieve their addiction and restore them to sanity. They should take step three. So it's right on the heels. I believe that that's the best way to work the steps, as quickly as possible. Some people argue that it needs to be more thorough. I disagree 100%. The thoroughness comes with agreement. If they agree that they understand, at least they're never going to do it 100%. It's not going to be. All the steps are ideals except for step one. Step one has to be done perfectly. The other 11 steps are ideals. It's progress, not perfection. We do the best we can to get to the idea of it. We're not going to ever get that idea perfectly. If you've been to college, some people know Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It starts off at a rudimentary level, air, food, water, and then it goes to security. And then what's the next one after? So safety. Then it's self-realization. And then I think the last one is self-actualization. And at any one of those levels of existence, you're only going to do a certain percentage of them at any given time. And so that's the way we do the steps. My goal is, as a sponsor, is to get you through in a thorough yet timely manner. And it's a little bit of a trade, but I've heard stories about, I had a sponsee, as a matter of fact, Dan from New Jersey, that in his group, are you ready for this, Harold? You better be sitting down when you hear this one. You had to go to meetings for a year before you could work the steps.
Oh, man. That's awful. You know, after reading about our founders, Dr. Bob, Bill W., it's very clear in the big book that they worked through those steps right away. They started on them. They went quickly. They would do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a spring. I mean, within hours, not months or years, but within hours. And the thing that helped me the most on step 3 was a sponsor who helped me think through the two words that were a puzzle to me, and that's the word will and the word life. Exactly how do I turn my will and my life over to the care of God? And he said, well, let's translate. Let's use some synonyms. And the synonym for will is my thoughts. And the synonym for lives, those are my actions. So the result is I made a decision to turn my thoughts and my actions over to God as I understood him. Now, with step 2, there's a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity. And at first, when I began my recovery, that higher power was the group itself. That was a power greater than me. Two heads are better than one. I'd gotten myself into a lot of trouble with my own thinking. So for me to turn my thoughts and my actions over to my higher power meant that I would check with the group about my thinking and about my actions. I would make no decision alone. Make no decision alone. Those four words became my motto, and I still use that as a guideline for my life. I make no decision alone. Now, there's a part of me that enjoys making decisions alone, thinks it's important to make decisions alone. It's my ego, E-G-O, edging God out. But if I'm going to work a strong program, I check in with the group, with sponsees, with sponsors, and I make no decision alone. So my thoughts can get me into trouble unless I bounce those off of others. My actions, again, I check out everything before I do it. I check in with people, pick up the phone, hi, I'm checking in. That has been a real key. And then we proceed to make a fearless and searching moral inventory, and then talk about that. Again, we're checking in with others in step 5, admit to ourselves, to God, and to another human being the exact nature of the things we've messed up. It doesn't mean every last stinking detail. It says the exact nature, the nature of it. So at the end of step 5, my sponsor taught me that we end up with a list of 6, 8, or 10 things that my list included confusion and procrastination and self-pity, just to name 3 of them. That's the exact nature of my twisted thinking, my addiction, my ism, my alcoholism, procrastination, self-pity, confusion. Confusion is a defense mechanism. That was a little tough to grasp at first, but it really has served me. So that really made step three tangible, something I could sink my teeth into and something that I could do on a daily basis. And I really appreciate you putting into words the idea that it's progress, not perfection, and we can make progress on this step by always checking our thoughts, checking our actions, turning our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understood it. Tradition 2 speaks to how I achieved that also, when it says that we listen to God as he expresses himself through our group members. So I really got it clearly that God speaks through others in my life all the time, and I really value that. What do you think, Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. Well, I'm really confused now. No, I'm only kidding. that was really good. Thank you. Actually, you cleared us something up. The other point I want, you know, the will, that was really good about thoughts. That was a good way to present that. I'm going to have to make an endeavor to remember that. That was really good. The other point I want to make.
I borrowed that sponsor. It's not my idea. It really was useful.
You can own it. It's okay.
All right.
Everything we do in AA that has a positive effect on the other person, you can take chart. You can take on. You don't have to say, "Oh, I heard so and so say this. This is really his and not mine." You could take it. I've even had people repeat my story because it was funny and it had a good punchline. But you know, hey, look, it's okay. It's not about me.
That's a compliment, isn't it?
It is, in a way. Yeah, sure it is. The other word is the plural of lives and not life. Our lives. And we're going to be getting into that. The multifaceted aspect of our behavior. The different facets of lives. But then, of course, and then God, as we understood him, that came up in AA early on. And that gave an out. So this way now it's spiritual kindergarten. You have an understanding. Your understanding is different than my understanding. Let's go with it. Whatever you understand is good enough. As long as you're not playing God, we can work with that. It's like clay. Okay, this is finger painting. Okay, so we're finger painting. This is, you believe this is God. As a finger painter, this is good enough. We can get into doing the bronze statues at a later date, or doing the Sistine Chapel. But right now, let's stick to the finger painting.
I like
the reading that. Pardon me?
I like that analogy.
In the big book, step three, pages 60 and 64, are directed to step three, and step three in the 12 and 12 are pages 34. Through 41. These are the questions I have my sponsees answer after the reading and from their own experience. Questions about the step. I believe written material is essential in getting through the steps, which makes it timely. If you don't use written material, it's going to drag it on, and the sponsee is not going to have the ability to confront their answers in black and white. Confrontation of the thought process is essential in developing a spiritual consciousness. My belief. Okay, what does the phrase God as we understood God means? 2, what is your concept of God or a higher power? Step 3, we're asked to actually look at that. A lot of people have prayed to God, gone to church and all that, but never really considered their concept of God, never made a personal relationship out of it. What is the difference between a life? What does it mean to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God? 3, what is the difference between a life run on self-will and a life that follows God's will, however you understand God? 5, how well has self-will served you to this point? What is a recent example in your life in exercising self-will rather than following what you believe might be God's will? How can you know God's will? I had that as up, huh? Do you have any reservations about turning your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God? If so, what are they? And 9, what does it mean to make a decision? In the first step, we overcome our denial and accepted powerlessness and unmanageability over our lives and over alcohol. We surrender to win. In step 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves was the solution, that it could restore us to sanity. In step 3, we discovered how to make use of that power by turning our will and our lives over to the care of that power. Step 3, in essence, is I can't, God can, I think I'll let God. Harold?
Yeah, that's super valuable. And I like how clear you make that. My sponsor also said it early on that let's take a look at surrender. What's happening is that I am waving a white flag and coming over to the winning side. So I don't know why I resisted surrendering for so long. But that's what it is, coming over to the winning side. Joseph?
Huh. The 12 and 12 states, the effectiveness of the whole AA program will rest upon how well and earnestly we have tried to come to a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step 3 has to be determined and persistent to be effective. In AA, we all have to come up with a higher power. For some, just slightly higher, and for some, the God of their fathers. For most of the time, the only time we thought about God was in an emergency, the God of 911. There was an atheist who loved to fish. An atheist, someone who says there is no God and lives like there is one, and the agnostic says there might be a God and lives like there isn't. He would travel the world to fish in exotic places. One late afternoon while fishing, the Loch Ness Monster emerged from the depths and threatened to destroy him. The atheist yells to heaven and pleads for help. The heavens open up and a voice is heard saying, I thought you didn't believe in me. The now believer calls back and says, Lord, Lord, give me a break. 2 minutes ago I didn't believe in the Loch Ness Monster either.
I like that.
Maybe the atheist cannot find God for the same reason a thief cannot find a policeman. They're not looking.
Yep.
Harold?
I believe that everyone has a religion. Each person's religion is their concept of how the world works. That is my religion. And others call it a worldview, but mine has changed completely since early recovery. And I think each week I say a little bit more about my journey with the scriptures. At first I thought I had several mistaken thoughts about the scriptures, the Bible. And things that I'd gotten from my mom, she taught that it was a translation of a translation of a translation, and it's actually not. We have more actual original documents, scrolls from that time that we can. It's the most accurately documented piece of work ever in history, with 25,000 items that we can compare, and they've identified, if there were little mistakes in transcribing, they can all be identified, and that one realization opened up an entire process of bringing into light some of the things that my parents taught. My dad didn't believe in God at all. My mom described herself as a recovering Catholic, and but she taught my three brothers and me all kinds of things that she had heard. You know, her heart was in the right place, but weren't really true. So doing a little scholarly work and finding out what is actually true has made a big difference. And then digging in, you know, my sponsor told me, well, contempt prior to investigation isn't right. And so I said, well, okay, I'll investigate it, and then I'll have contempt. So I started reading. But if, I don't know if anyone out there is familiar with the scriptures, but it is the living word. And so as I began to study, it began to do a couple of things. One is explain itself, and that's my experience with it. And so just the process of being amazed, which gave me a lot of new energy for the daily making the decision to turn my life and my will, my thoughts and my actions over to God. So the way I know, what I'm getting at is that the way I know God's will, as in step 11, our assignment is to pray for two things: knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And so reading the scriptures has been the number one way I've discovered, and I learned this from a lot of other people clear back through history, that's the way to know God's will, is to read it in the scriptures. And so I know we're in spiritual kindergarten, but that's the primer. Read the book, you know. I had a lot of resistance to, at Christmas time, reading the instructions of the toy that I was trying to assemble at midnight, and but I finally faced the fact that things work a lot better when I do that. Same thing with the scriptures. However, now that we're nearing the holiday season, the six most terrible words to read at holiday times: some assembly required, batteries not included.
That's good.
All right. So go ahead, Joseph.
Thanks, Harold. You know why old men study the scriptures?
I know why W.C. Fields did.
They're cramming for final exams.
Yes. He said that.
Now, you got to remember, as spiritual kindergarten, let me finish my thought. In spiritual kindergarten, we're dealing in AA, we're dealing with people who don't have any belief system, agnostics or atheists, Islam, Jew, Gentile, the gamut of people's beliefs. Some of us had a belief in God that we had developed as children and never changed. Still others mouthed the words, not giving much thought to whether we believed them or not. We were, I call that enculturalization. You're born into a culture, you go to church at Christmas or New Year's, you go to the synagogue on Friday, keeps everybody off your back. You know, you pray 3 to 5 times on your back because that's the way your folks do it, and that's what you're expected to do. You really don't know why you're going through all this ritual, but, you know, that's what the people in your tribe do. And to be part of that tribe, you're going to act. How much you believe it is really, you haven't even really considered that. This is just what we do. Some had no concept of God at all. For all intents and purposes, they were the God of their own understanding. The scriptures say they walked in the light of their own fire. If they couldn't only manage well, step three asks us to examine at the deepest and at the most profound level what our concept of God, even of no God, really was. Now, I take a lot of comfort in the scriptures, but I like to keep an open mind in kindergarten. I believe that eventually everyone will come to agreements of spirituality, if not religion. Some don't. Some will never. Some dismiss it. And if they're staying sober and they're helping another alcoholic, who am I to say? See, once I start doing that, now I'm playing God again. This is real personal stuff, folks. You got to have a personal relationship with the God of your understanding, not with the God of my understanding. I heard a guy say at a meeting one time, I had the God of my misunderstanding.
Yes.
And that worked for a while. Step three asks us to examine our concept of God and to work with it, whatever that might be.
Well,
Muhammad,
and I think
Moses, well, go ahead.
I think the spirit of this is the problem of self-reliance. And the founders, Dr. Bob and Bill W., understood that our own thinking had gotten us where we were. We had to break down certain ideas, and we had to quit being so self-reliant. We needed to lean on others. We needed to acknowledge there is a power greater than me. And then in step three, turn our lives and our will over to that power. Stop being so self-reliant. That was the key for me. That's one of the things my mom had taught us boys. She had four boys, and I call it the Muhammad Ali philosophy. I am the greatest. I can do anything I put my mind to. Total self-reliance. And something really, really important happens when we put that aside and we give ourselves permission to rely on a higher power, a power greater than ourselves. So I'm glad we're talking about this tonight, Joseph.
Step three asks us to examine our concept of God and to work with it. We can change it if we find it necessary and desirable. Wow, that's a fairly wide breath. Self will run riot. A riot is a form of disorder characterized by lashing out in a sudden, intense rash of violence. Riots are typically chaotic. Self-will sounds like self-will to me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's what we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, in a 1959 Eldorado convertible, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. I put in the Eldorado to see if my sponsees are listening to me when I'm telling them. And they look up at me and go, an Eldorado?
That was a fantastic car, though.
That was the premiere. Man, they had the big fins on the back with the three bullets. That was a car. You knew that was a car.
They had front-wheel drive?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't know, but I don't think so. Not a GM. I don't think so. The AA Big Book tells us, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. A wise man once said, "Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him." We think that our troubles are of our own making. Got the ball rolling, kiddo. And when we start to examine that later on, this is what we find out. The 12 and 12 puts it this way. Each of us had his own near-fatal encounter with the juggernaut of self-will and has suffered enough under its weight to be willing to look for something better. Harold?
That's really, really terrific. We are our own worst enemy, and so let's read on, Joseph.
I have it somewhere. I'm sure it's in here somewhere, but Pogo the Alligator.
Yes,
was a comic strip. No more, but he's gone. He was in Louisiana Alligator, very philosophical, and he said, and one of his best quotes are, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." What is that something better? I might not be much, but I'm all I think about. What is the something better? The AA Big Book tells us this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to stop playing God. It didn't work. We live by the adage, it's either my way or the highway. And addiction is route one. Only the lonely. Since our best thinking got us here, and we had to stop trying to control people, places, and things. We had to develop humility. Humiliation was ultra familiar, but humility was a horse of a different color. We were beaten down into a state of reasonableness. We became teachable. We had to be convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. We did have fun for a while, but nothing lasting. The fabric of our lives became torn and shallow. The years of unmanageability slowly turned to quiet desperation, or for some, a wailing lament. Alcohol gave me wings and then took away the sky. Harold?
Wow, that is a very, very clear look at what is it called? Incomprehensible demoralization?
Demoralization. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gave us wings and then took away the sky. There's another paragraph that says we drank in order to be glib and funny and found that we can't even speak in society. We drank so that we'd have courage to be with the opposite sex, and now all of our relationships are destroyed. You know, this it goes on and on. The very things, well, for a short time, alcohol was just a terrific answer to my problems, but then it became the problem. Joseph?
Yeah, thank you, Harold. I was going to, I had come across, I know you, how much you love the scriptures. I do too. When it comes to AA, I back off a little bit more on them because some people who don't read the scriptures, it's an alien territory to them. And anything alien to someone is immediately sought with skepticism and fear. So sometimes you got to give him milk, you know, and I'm a firm believer in giving him milk. If you try to give him meat, they'll perish.
Yeah, they might choke.
Yeah, they'll choke. They'll choke every time. It's just too much for them. They're not ready for that. They're coming from a different landscape. And when you do that, to me, it's almost like you're playing God again. They have to come to these agreements. Of spiritual, you know, little by little, you know. I was going to read that. This is a little off off to one side, but I have this on the website. It's called The Grape, A Crushing Romance. Ever since man first crushed grapes. And the first thing I came across, the oldest I came across, I believe was the Egyptians started with brewing beer. Beer was before wine. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, the Egyptians, and I don't know, 5,000-6,000 years ago, long time. Long time. I don't believe they called it Bud at the time. I don't know. I got to come up with something funny what they would have called it. But they came up with the ability to brew. And this is in the King James Version of the Bible.
The Pharaoh of the Spirit.
There you go. Yeah. It's in the 23rd Proverb. I came across this, and it was very unique the day I came across this. This was my regular scriptural reading. I tried to read the scriptures every day, just like getting into the big book in the 12 and 12. I think that any good information is good to keep your mind on. Good stuff in, good stuff out. And I came across this. I had a sponsee just a couple of years ago, and he was having a hard time with it. You know, I went to Clancy Seven Questions and my usual routine with him. And he said, well, I really believe I'm more of a sex addict than an alcoholic. I says, well, that's okay. Let's get started with the AA. And then we could, you know, make decisions down the road. Let's do one addiction at a time. He says, okay. And, you know, the next morning I came across, this was my next scripture reading. It's the 23rd Psalm. Now, I'm not going to get into this. It starts off with sex addiction. It's verses, I think, 22 and 23 starts with sex addiction, or 27, 28. I'm not going to get into that on the radio, but it talks about a woman is a deep ditch. And a narrow pit. In other words, talking about prostitution and women that are the women of the night, prostitutes. And then it gets into alcoholism, which was really interesting. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling without wounds, without cause? Who had redness of eyes? You know what that is, Harold? Sounds like my hangover.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely a very clear picture.
They that tarry long at the wine, they go to seek mixed wine. Last call for alcohol. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Nothing of that watered-down wine you give to the tourists. I want the real thing. Everybody back then drank wine. It was like a Beaujolais. It was a what they call a young wine, not really highly fermented, just a little alcohol to kill the bacteria because clean water was hard to come by. So if you didn't drink with a little alcohol in it, you were going to get sick from the bacteria, dysentery, all of that. So with a little alcohol in it, you kill the bugs. Wow, well, what a great idea. They had to figure it out because it was either that or die. So, but the deep, dark red wines were the highly fermented wine, and the greater the fermentation process, the more the alcohol content. Wow. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red. Okay. Oh, it's dark wine. Huh? When it giveth its color in the cup, nice big cup, the deeper the cup, the more darker the color. See it? And this is kind of confusing. When it moveth itself aright. Did you get that?
No.
That's the big, deep cup. Fill her up with the good stuff. I might be a little tipsy, but my wine will always know which way is up. Can you see it? I'm tipsy. Liquid always finds its own level.
Yes.
The wine will find that it moveth itself aright. I'm tipsy. I'm moving back and forth, but the liquid's staying to the horizon. At last, biteth like a serpent. You see it now? Okay. I had a little hard time with that, but I got it. At last, it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Okay, so it's a little dangerous. Okay, maybe even a little deadly. I can handle it. No problem. Then I shall behold strange women, and their hearts shall utter perverse things. Hey, good-looking, I don't know you, but you called to me. I like to swing on your back porch. Can you think of a better way to get to know somebody? 34, yea, that shall be as the, see if you get this one. Yea, that shall be in that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or he that lieth upon the top of a mast. The room spins as I lay my head down. I throw my leg to the floor to steady the swerve of the curve. Sometimes it's so violent, I feel like I'm going to be flung out of the crow's nest and onto the deck. Can you see that, Harold?
Wow, that's, you know.
They
yo
have stricken
ho,
me.
Yo ho, it's a pirate's life for me.
They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, but not. When shall I awake? This is the key line. I will seek it yet again. Don't you remember you were a mess? They beat you up. You really don't remember? You're sick and you don't feel a thing anymore. It's like a nightmare that won't end. No matter what, I can't stop, for I will need to drink once more.
Wow.
That was the next day, and I looked at that and go, I went to read that at a conference one time in a meeting, and I got turned down.
That's, it's crystal clear, isn't it?
Oh, I'm telling you. This is from an alcoholic 3,000 years ago. The Psalms were the Psalms were written between 400 and 1,000. The Proverbs between just about the same time, BC.
And what's so interesting, there's a chapter in Proverbs for each day of the month.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right,
31.
So let's get back to the, yeah, so that, let's see, I will see, in steps one and two, we were subordinating our will to God's will as you understand God. The divine agenda is a powerful act of humility. It is for the cure, it's the cure for grandiosity, to self-will run riot. Our inflated egos often see it as humiliation, trying to hang on to the last vestige of the illusion of control.
Yes.
Humility is accepting ourselves as we really are in our proper place in the world. This is Thomas Merton. So, I mean, if we could see ourselves as other people see us, we would truly be humble. That was Thomas Merton, Trappist monk. He's dead now. Great, great writer, great philosopher. If we could see ourselves as other people see us, we would disappear on the spot. Sirach, he's a philosopher. That if God gave us the power to see ourselves as others see us, it would from many a blunder free us and foolish notion. Robert Burns in a poem to a louse. We begin to learn that as we make decisions about the course and actions of our lives, we do not make decisions about the results of those actions. Harold?
I had a wonderful friend, and early in recovery, his sponsor, they were discussing this step, and he wasn't doing that well in checking in with others, with turning his will and his life over. He wanted to run the show. He was used to that. That was familiar. So he continued to do stupid things. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. So after getting a little sick of this, the sponsor said, the sponsor gave him an assignment, and his assignment was to go to a junkyard and get a steering wheel and carry that around everywhere you go for a week. And that was the assignment, as a reminder to quit steering the bus, to let God do it, to, quit playing God, to quit trying to run his life, to turn it over. That was a week he'll remember forever, and so will I, actually. Very creative assignment. Really helped him remember to turn it over. Joseph?
Yeah, that is good. I like that. Although we make decisions, about, we do the best we can to make the action, we do the next right thing, but the outcome, we let go of the outcome. Our resentment was like taking poison and expecting someone else to die. An expectation was a resentment under construction. We do not buy into the outcome, what we do. We do the next right thing and turn that outcome to our new employer, God. We accept the outcome, whatever or however it may be. We have found a new freedom and a new happiness. We can put down our burdens of carrying around the world. God's will. I hear tell that the right thing and the hard thing is always the same thing. Some think we're going to be asked to do things we do not want to do. We might be asked to do things too hard for us to do, forgetting how little peace and satisfaction doing it our way got us. After all, maybe just didn't want anybody telling us what to do, including God. Harold?
Yes, that's the essence of it, you know? That's the essence of it. Self-reliance. And in all fairness, we've had that pounded into us in schools and in many different settings. I took a number of different success courses, you know, the Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think that's the name of one of them. And a lot of seminars and self-help groups and so forth. And it's all about self-reliance. You are the greatest. You can do anything. It wasn't until I came in contact with some believers and began to get a grasp of the essence of the scriptures that I began to appreciate humility and surrender and trying to be of service to God and our fellow man. It completely changed my value system and the way I make decisions. For the better. I think a life of recovery is really dependent on the willingness to serve our fellow human beings. Joseph?
When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. Decisions made can be regarded as a mental process resulting in the selection of a course of action among several alternatives. We are asked to decide to do something, not to act, but to agree to act. That's a decision. That means that we can only turn our will and our lives over to the care of God imperfectly and irregularly. We have to keep making that decision. We often say in the program, I keep turning it over and I keep taking it back. Old habits die hard and the ego is ever on the prowl. Another saying in AA, the monkey might be off my back, but the circus is still in town. Harold?
I enjoy how all this comes together. And one of the most interesting aspects of working with others and trying to help people is the intense skepticism that I often witness when people first arrive in the rooms of AA, and we say some things about call me, or I'm willing to help, and some people have quite a hard time believing that we really mean it. I mean, they look askance and think, they've told me they're thinking, what's in it for this guy? I mean, what is going on here? He's going to do something and there's really nothing in it for him. And they just can't believe that. The background from which they come is such that nobody does anything unless there's something in it for them. But indeed, what I love most about the rooms of AA and the willingness to work with others is the part where let us love you until you can love yourself. I mean, the people are willing to just serve and be helpful, and there's no monetary gain. There's nothing in it except recovery, which of course is everything. It's everything. We only get to keep what we give away. That's my favorite motto. Joseph?
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, we're at 10. We'll be closed. We're shutting down in Nashville because we're from 9 to 10. We're going to be going on. I think we already just shut down over there, and I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. But we're going to continue on for a little while longer and finish up the step. I negotiated more time on the blog talk, so we have that. But we're off. We're off live on the Nashville circuit. It's from 9 to 10. So anyway, so the next area would be. I wanted to say, when you said about your angle, if you remember, what's your angle? Isosceles. That's right to the point. To a point.
Oh,
it's
my.
Right to a point, isn't it? Yeah, that's right to a point. Yeah, what's in it for me? There's not, people, even doing the website, that was always been an argument. You're making money. No, I'm not making money. But if you put the website together, you would be making money because that's how you think. This is about grandiosity. No, it's not about grandiosity, but if you were doing the website, it would be about grandiosity because that's how you think. People will only see the limits of their own understanding and reality.
Remember last week I shared my favorite Zen saying, when a pickpocket sees a saint, all he sees are his pockets.
Oh, that's great. Why lives, plural, instead of life? Do we turn our entire life over to the care of God? Surely not. Not my sex life. Not my business life. You know, business is business. My family life. My sporting life. My church life. As parents, as spouses, as friends. If it's just the same to you, I'd like to hold on to some of them, at least for the time being. Sorry, my friend, it's all our lives. Some people miss that. You know, they're going to turn over their recovery life to God. But they don't want to turn
over
their...
My favorite meeting in a few years ago was a men's-only meeting that had like 95 people. We met at 7 a.m. Saturday morning, 95 men meeting to increase their conscious contact with God. It was really something. In that meeting, we discussed this process we wanted to turn over our entire lives, and the part that people were wanting to hold back, we called that the boat. I'll turn over everything but the boat. So with affection, we began to, that became a catchphrase with us. I'll turn over everything but the boat. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Knowing God's will. First, you must be open to the idea. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it will be open unto you. When we try running the show again, we miss the mark. When we are specially resistant is when we are certain about what we want. We have found that if we had gotten certain things that would have we had wanted, it would not have boded well for us. On the other hand, some things we dreaded turned out to be well for us. We keep in mind the saying, God gives us what we need, not necessarily what we want. And God never gives us more than we can handle without a way to accomplish it or to escape from it. A lot of folks miss that scripture about God gives you doesn't give you more than you can handle. That's not correct. The scripture really says he will make a way for you to escape. If he didn't give you more than you can handle, why did he put an escape clause in it?
There you go. That's great. That's really valuable.
You know, they read that, but they miss the it's called I think it's called miasma, where the closing thought is at the end, not in the beginning. It's reversed. So in other words, you will be tempted beyond your ability. And with that temptation, an escape shall be made. And what's the escape? Of course, the escape is the scriptures, the gospel, the big book, staying sober, working out with us. We have to take an action. That's the escape. So now we can act and not be acted upon. That's the escape.
And time after time, people have said to me that their escape was to pray, God, please lift this craving from me. Joseph?
In a new meeting, I'm glad you brought that up. I was in Crested Butte several years ago, and a lady had a year's sobriety, and she said she had gone a year before she heard someone tell her, and I try to remember to say this when there's a newcomer for the first time in the meeting, because we'll tell them, don't drink no matter what. Well, Harold, if I knew how not to drink, if I could not drink, I wouldn't be there. I'm looking for some way not to drink, if that's why I came into the room. And what I found to work the best is to get down on your knees and ask God to remove the craving. And stay there until it does. And you know, the only reason I say that, because I've done it and it works. I wouldn't say it if it didn't work for me. I don't deal with theory in AA. I deal with a practical aspect of the program. This worked for me. This didn't work for me. I don't talk to it. Got a new sponsee. He's in rehab right now and he wants to go to a halfway house. I'm not really into the halfway house deal, but I'm not going to say that. All I tell him is I didn't go to a halfway house, and I can't speak to it. But I know if you're willing to put in the effort, I'll put in a commensurate effort as your sponsor, and it works. That's what I know. That's what I say.
That's
regular
right. I
prayer.
Never ask anyone to do anything that I have not done.
Done or willing to do. Regular prayer and meditation. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to God. Think of it like a telephone conversation. You speak to God, tell him how good he is and how you're going to be good by doing the next right thing. Then you put in your shopping list. I want the Mercedes, the blonde, the house, the new job. And then you tell him, you would like to hang with him a little longer, but you have a million things to do today, but we'll talk soon, and you have to run and click off. And then you wonder, gee, I wonder why he never talks to me. Be still and get to know God. That's meditation. Listening for God. David E. related a story in a meeting. He was doing the program and was having an animated conversation with God, like one man talking to another. He paused and said to himself, "No, he was but talking to himself." And then he heard a clear, small voice, "I am you, but you are not me." intuition. One of the 12 promises in the is that will intuitively that we will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. A Dudleyism, I now baffle situations that used to handle me. I suggest Fossies use the Benjamin Franklin method on a sheet of paper, draw a vertical line down the center, one side the pros and the other side the cons. Make an informed decision, yes or no. Then pray to God, ask if the decision is right. If you have clarity of thought and a positive inclination, go with it. If you have stupor of thought and a negative inclination, punt and don't look back as you have put it in God's hands. That's a part of the website I call it Decision Making for Dummies. I never give advice. I advise people never to give advice. People who give advice usually need it more than anyone. We're not in the advice business. We're in the experience, strength, and hope business. I can't give you advice. Sorry. Even if I have a sponsee that turns around and says, well, if you were me, what would you do? And my response to that is, I'm not you, so I haven't got a clue. Sometimes friends, when you're trusting in the process, God will sometimes speak to you through your friends. In meetings or in a still small voice, many times I've heard God talking to me directly through the voice of others, as long as I seek him and try to stay in a fit spiritual condition. Readings, a chance opening of the basic text. On 7/07/09, I was in a men's meeting in Austin, the Liars Club. They picked the topic from a chance opening from the Big Book. It's agreed in the chat in their chapter in their charter to use the first 164 pages only. For some reason, the fellow next to me had a chance opening of the Big Book to one of the stories, Rum, Radio, and Rebellion. Rum, Radio, and Rebellion is a story title that I had used to name sponsorship in the sponsorship website, rumradio.org. The reason I came to the meeting was to introduce the sponsorship website. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's excellent. It's excellent.
Yeah, it was right there, you know, and the guy tapped me on the shoulder and says, look where it opened, Rum, Radio, and Rebellion. And the only reason I was at that meeting was to promote Rum Radio. That was it. I'm in. So you could see where my fervor comes from for this thing. You know, I get beaten back and I keep coming back, and I know eventually what's going to happen. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
That's right. Yep. And what I really appreciate most are the little things, timing, where God reaches down and taps us on the shoulder and says, this is only this timing, this meeting, these events that took place today are only possible by God. And we get little glimpses like that, and it really energizes me. Joseph?
The steps? Yeah, thank you. The steps? So we have friends, readings, intuition, and the steps. When we're unsure about what to do, we turn to the steps. They often contain the needed direction and answers we seek. We believe that God's will for us always includes recovery. It works when we work it. We have to apply the third step daily, sometimes hourly, sometimes moment to moment. Sometimes we decide to turn our will over, and as often as we decide to take it back. The ego is not easily deflated, and we insist on the illusion of control. There was an inmate in a mental asylum who obtained a scalpel. The patient accosted his doctor and put the scalpel to the doctor's throat and asked his doctor, "What have you lost?" The doctor replied, "I've lost control." "No," the patient replied, "you have lost the illusion of control." We have to accept that we have no control over people, places, and things. We only have control over our own actions and attitudes. Harold?
Yes, that is so, so fundamental. And my favorite example of that story is the wonderful book by Dr. Viktor Frankl. He was captured by the Nazis. And
A Man's Search for Meaning.
Yes, A Man's Search for Meaning. And in the concentration camp, over a long period of time, he noticed a pattern where very frail and fragile people would somehow survive, but he would notice men very muscular and healthy when they got there would die within weeks, and he slowly began to figure out that it was their hatred. So he began to teach his friends in the camp, do not let the Nazis make you hate them. He had a revelation where he was suddenly taught that the one freedom no one can ever take from you is your freedom to choose how to respond in any situation. So with those two teachings, we're free to respond, to choose our response, and we can choose not to hate the Nazis. He helped over 10,000 people survive the camps. We are choosing. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Willing to be willing. Willing is like the mustard seed. If it's a good seed, it will, if planted in the heart, it will grow. And AA is a good seed. Willingness is the key that unlocks the door to step three in faith. Willingness is like the mustard seed. Remember that. Anytime we have a willingness, it's asking us just to put it in our heart, and it will grow. Sometimes we have to just be willing to be willing. Turn it over and over again. It means we turn over the results of whatever we're concerned about over to the care of God after we have done the next right thing. So we got to do the legwork. This doesn't mean we just lay on our duff and nothing. We do nothing. We do. We do. And then we turn over the results. It's often misunderstood that we don't have to do anything. Just turn it over. We are saved by grace after all that we can do. What we can turn over is the results of our actions, not the actions themselves. We do not try to bring those actions into line what we believe to be God's will for us. We pray only for the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. The hardest part of turning our will over to the care of God is when we don't, when we do not get what we want, we are on the same, you know, if we're not, it's easy when me and God are on the same page. But it's when our will seems to be opposed to God's will. That's when we need acceptance. The 12 and 12 suggest a way to find it. In all times of emotional disturbances or indecision, we can pause, ask for quiet, and in that stillness simply ask God, grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not my will, be done. Harold?
Yes, that's the step upon which I'm currently working, and it took me a mere 17 years to identify the word us in that step. Sought through prayer and meditation to increase our conscious contact with God, praying only for two things: knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. That's become so important that I can know God's will for others. I can help others with that. I can loan my faith to others. I can borrow faith from others. We can know for each other and with each other God's will for us. As you said a moment ago, God's will is always about recovery. We can hear someone say something in a meeting, and it is God speaking through that person. That is real, and it is based on Scripture, and it really functions. a very important part of how the steps work. And you know, it's really exciting. And we actually have a responsibility to, after we've been around for a while in the rooms, I like to think of recovery and the rooms like an orchard. At first, people come in, pick the fruit, eat, and are nourished. And there's also, I don't know if you've ever known anyone that owned an orchard, but there's a lot of work to be done in a fruit orchard. There's pruning and cleaning and preparing the ground and lots of things to do. So at first we come in and eat the fruit. Later we realize that there are seeds to plant. Now, yes, God's responsible for the outcome, but we have to get out there. I call it pray and move your feet. So we do a lot, and I can keep my ears open in a meeting, listening for God. And it makes meetings very exciting to me. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. To me, I've come to the understanding that God's will also, for me, is working with the new guy, trying to be of service. Dr. Bob put it in two words. If you were going to reduce AA into two words, it was love and service. And if you were going to reduce the Gospels, is love and service. Funny how that worked out. I went to a Torah study in Austin one time, and I got a lot out of it, not because of what they knew, which was really important. It's almost as important as what they didn't know. And to build upon that, and the rabbi said that the gospel of the Jew was the law, but the gospel of the Christian was love. Love and service is AA. So being in the service of your fellow beings, that's when you're in the service of your God. So to me, that's, you're always in God's will when you're doing for somebody else. There's even a scripture that says, seek for every other man's wealth. Wow. If your spouse is struggling with this step, and I put a little thing in here, no matter how much I prove and prod, I cannot quite believe in God. But, oh, I hope to God that he unswervingly believes in me. God's will is not an itinerary, but an attitude. Andrew Deuce. I tell my sponsors, pray about the step, asking for guidance, courage, and willingness daily. Reread the applicable pages in the basic text. Keep a list of examples of self-will and how they're hurting him or her. Keep track of the time your sponsor tries to follow God's will and what it feels like. Return to step two. What we've discovered, anytime there's a problem with a step, the previous step has, there was something missing in the previous step. And step three is a critical step. It has to be given a persistent try. Otherwise, all the other steps will not come to fruition. Because any time you balk on a step, you're not turning your will over again. You're taking it back. Talk with other program members about how they work the step. The Big Book suggests that it's very desirable to take a spiritual step with an understanding person. It's important your sponsee formally takes it with you. Ask your sponsee what step three means to them and how they intend to apply it. Ask your sponsee if they have made the decision to turn their will and their lives and over to the care of God. If your sponsee has answered yes, they have taken the step. Remind your sponsee that step three is worked daily because we often turn it over and take it back. Our goal is spiritual progress, not perfection. We are not saints, but surely angels with dirty faces. To conclude the step, have your sponsor recite the third step prayer, voicing it without reservation. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I put an amen on that. The third step prayer is found on page 67 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When your sponsee has finished this prayer, they have concluded step three and can now begin step four. Harold?
Yes, I like to ask my sponsees to call on a daily basis, read that prayer to me over the phone. What a great way to start the day. It's a great lunch hour activity, afternoon, whatever time, but just every day, enter that spirit of humbly turning it over, turning over our thoughts and our actions. Make no decision alone. That's what it boils down to for me. Joseph?
You know, a little tip, Harold, the way I do something similar, a little but different. It's one of the first assignments I give my sponsees is to get, you know, when they have their newcomers packet, if your group doesn't do newcomers packet, I suggest that they do. Get a little packet in there and, you know, a little sundry material. But if they don't, what I really want out of that packet is the fellas' names. And if it's a woman, woman's names, because this could be turned into a list of life-saving group. So you have these men's names and what they give their name and their phone numbers that they're agreeing to be called. So I suggest to the sponsee that every day for the next 30 days, they call someone on the list. Now, of course, this is their home group. And the reason I ask them to do that is to get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help.
Yes.
So two, since they're doing it with the men in their home group, they're getting to know their name and they're getting to know his name. So you're getting to know each other's names in the home group. You're identifying with the home group. Three, you might consider that the third step prayer encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And four, the fellow you're calling might have been considering picking up his first drink of alcohol. And when you called him, chances are he won't. So you're already into service work. I found this to be a very productive way of doing it. Harold?
I like a lot. Yeah, I like that a lot. I appreciate you putting that together that way. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. This is very effective, and I love borrowing things from others, things that they've seen work well in their recovery and the recovery of their sponsees. That's great. Thank you for that, Joseph.
Well, I thank you, Harold. I find this to be very productive. This wasn't my idea. Sorry. I'd like to take credit, but I'm not going to own it. It came from, I always forget his name. Okay, I'll take it since I can't remember. Dudley. Dudley is one of the wheels at, Post Oak. You know, the Post Oak Club has been, they're moving. I guess they lost their lease.
Well,
they banned me from it seemed like every club that's had a negative reaction to Rum Radio has folded. I think it's just coincidental, or I can develop my messianic complex from there.
There you go. Maybe the ground opens up and swallows the whole tribe.
Swallows them up. Yeah. Yeah. Those lawyers and liars. The joke goes like this with Post Oak. It's like, hey, you know, don't badmouth Post Oak. I got sober there. And the other alcoholic goes, That only proves that if you want it bad enough, you can get sober in a bar. Anyway, any last comments? We're just about out of time.
Well, I just want to encourage our listeners to give some thought to working with others